101, a version 1 podcast.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 101 podcast, conversations with the UK and Ireland's top IT and digital leaders. My name is Suraj Shah and today I'm joined by Eileen Jennings-Brown, who is Head of Technology at the Wellcome Trust. Eileen, it's great to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Hi Suraj. Hi everybody. Thank you so much for having me today. Where do you want to begin? What do you think the listeners want to hear today?
So, I mean, I think the best thing to focus on today is focusing on how some of the transformation that you had done before the pandemic has actually set you up to be able to get through the pandemic. Unlike many other businesses who had to actually transform during the pandemic, you were actually set up quite nicely. So that's one of the main focuses, I think, of today, as well as some of the challenges you faced and also looking at what it is to be a technology leader today. So Eileen, perhaps to begin with, do you want to give us a bit of a lowdown on what exactly your role is and also, you know, a bit about the Wellcome Trust?
Yes, I think that's a really good place to start. And the pandemic, so topical, isn't it? I've got lots of interesting stories to share. So my role is Head of Technology at the Wellcome Trust. The Wellcome Trust are a global organisation. We are a philanthropic organisation and we have a portfolio that is worth £29 billion. So I'll explain what that actually means. First and foremost, we are a charity and we give away money into funding, into research for science and health. We are also a bank for, in all sense, for all intents and purposes, we are a bank. And that is how we manage our portfolio, which is worth £29 billion. We manage our own assets. We do that ourselves. And then we also have a museum and a library. And all of that happens under the same roof. There's about 1,200 people that work for Wellcome. In my team, which is the technology team, there are 65 of us. And we provide all the infrastructure, all the applications, all the cloud services. We do project delivery and change management across the whole suite. We do all the customer experience. We do the development. So there's so many things that go on in my team. But that is Wellcome in a nutshell, and then what my team does and what I'm responsible for.
Okay, great. Well, I think that gives everyone a good overview of what you do. And in terms of the question, you know, first question, I was, you know, usually ask people what they've had to do because of the pandemic. But in this instance, it's probably best to ask you what Wellcome was like before COVID. You know, how were you set up?
That's a great question. Yeah, because you're absolutely right. Lots of organizations are doing digital transformations that would typically take 2 years and they're achieving this in 2 months, for an example. So 3 years ago, in Wellcome, only 150 people could connect remotely. Everybody is office-based, so we didn't really know how to work remotely. That wasn't a language that we were familiar with. Move forward to today, and we have done a digital transformation over the last 2.5 years, which brings us to today. And at the point when the pandemic struck, we were able to decant everyone from the building and everybody was set up with the technology. Our systems were in place. We had adopted a whole bunch of new cloud technology. We had re-architected on-prem applications into cloud services. So everybody was able to leave the building and work remotely. The challenges around that were actually that people had never had to work remotely before. And so the adjustments that we saw people having to make were around coming to terms with managing teams remotely, actually relying on the digital technology to conduct their work, whereas typically they would just walk up to somebody's desk and have a chat. All of that was taken away. But going back to your question and the point that you raised, 3 years ago, only 150 people had the ability to actually connect into our systems remotely. And everybody was office-based.
Okay. So you actually had all of the technology. It was more of a cultural shift that required a bit of assistance. So what did you kind of have to do yourself to kind of help your staff to get through that that obstacle of working from home and all these new ways of working?
It's probably worth me talking a little bit about the digital transformation that we did and how that even came about, that got us to the point where we could seamlessly then exit the building. And then I'll be able to touch on the culture side of it, because that was a very interesting few months that we've had. So when I came along and joined Welcome, the technology team, digital and technology division is what we're called, they had aspirations to move everything out to the cloud, and they had introduced a new operating model, which was agile working for everyone across the whole of the IT team. So when I came along, this was the aspiration, and I asked them, so what's your plan and how are you going to go about achieving this? I ended up helping them write the strategy. So we got the strategy written. We identified what our underpinning principles were going to be in terms of achieving a digital transformation. And that took quite a while to get that strategy actually signed off. But throughout the life of the creation of the strategy, we were having a dialogue with the organization about the changes, about what they could expect in terms of the technology, about what it meant for them and how it would benefit them. We were also living and breathing the strategy, even though we were writing it. So by the time it came to signing it off, it was actually a fairly simple task, the sign-off itself. But as a result of talking this language, living and breathing the strategy, actually bringing it to life, doing these things, and you know, making things fit for purpose, and prioritizing things in that way, we were able to get the technology changed. Now, one of the things that I underestimated as part of doing a transformation is the culture change that is required to bring everybody on that journey with us. And I learned that there were people around Welcome who had actually been there for a very long time, didn't know any other way of working. And there was a lot of time and energy that was invested in helping them not only come to terms with the fact that things were changing, but also coming to terms with what it was changing into. I mean, this is new technology. These were using products that they'd never heard of before. We were introducing new processes that were alien to them within the confines of Welcome. So the culture change was a very significant piece that played into the success of the digital transformation. And that's the thing that we have been doing for the last 2 and a bit years, which led us to then in February when we all, or March, when we decanted the building, everybody was a lot more familiar. But to your question around how did I then help the staff come to terms with this is how we work remotely? In IT, working remotely is passé. It's just what we do. We are all very familiar and comfortable with it. Everybody else in the organisation, for everyone else, it was a slightly different story, because they had only ever conducted business in the building. They were very used to having the water cooler chats that you hear people talk about that they miss the most, the casual interaction. In Welcome, we have a cafeteria and people could just have casual conversations when they were buying their breakfast, for example, and that's when they would bump into people that they otherwise maybe wouldn't see throughout the day. And also we had a lot of people that came into the building for events or to visit the museum, to see the artifacts. And we were hosting many things, many conversations and events that were being presented globally as well. So all of that had to change. So one of the things that we did was our AV team, that's our audio visual team, have actually been outstanding throughout the summer. They went and made a point of talking to everybody that undertook their work in that way, if it was the face-to-face interaction or the events, and they educated them on how to use our remote meeting tools, for example. They went out and they got more meeting tools that enabled events to happen, and they did that at pace. So that was an outstanding job, and we constantly get great feedback about our AV team and the work that they've done. Something else that we did is we used our internal training team to have more compressed and condensed one-to-one sessions with people on how to use the technology and even how to manage a team remotely. So this was an interesting one that we were using our training team to teach people how to manage, but it was working, and it was actually just showing them the tools that were available. The managers could figure out themselves the method that they wanted to apply. We also, and I think most organizations probably did this, but we also wrote a new policy that became how we operated throughout the life of working remotely. And the policy included tips and tricks and you know, methods and techniques that people could apply in order to look after the welfare of their team, check in, even onboarding new staff. This was all new things that we were having to do remotely. And I'm sure everybody out there will be thinking, oh yeah, we had to do that, and you know, we did it this way, and well, we had challenges with this. But I personally, what I did with my team is I actually introduced a new tool called 15.5, and that helps me, it gives me an understanding of how the team are feeling. People's welfare are very important, is very important to me. And I just think that as a compassionate and empathic leader, our time is now, and we need to look after the people, because actually the people are really suffering. So it was anything that I could do or put in place that would help people feel like they had the support that they needed around them. So I just introduced this tool, and I used it to keep an eye on how people were feeling. And they're able to just check in and give a pulse check on how they felt that week, talk about a thing that went well. But it also gives them a platform to talk about something that didn't go so well. And I can then, you know, pick up a dialogue with them if that's necessary.
It's really interesting, actually. And well, I wanted to touch on something else that you mentioned in relation to this. So you mentioned when it came to remote working, you know, IT staff are usually more kind of accustomed to working remotely. And there's always this, you know, I suppose assumption that IT staff are happy to work in silos or individually and, you know, kind of keep to themselves a lot of the time. But kind of throughout the pandemic, I wrote a couple of pieces around mental health and IT, and you know, spoke to several people in IT who were really struggling with the whole remote working aspect for various reasons. Just wondered if you had found that perhaps that tech staff and IT staff were affected as well, you know, mentally by all of this.
There's no easy answer to this. All I can do is listen, is to show that I hear staff. And that is demonstrated through some of the things that I put in place that help them. But I have seen this, and I've seen it in so many different degrees. I've seen people who are thriving as a result of being able to work remotely. This is their dream. I have seen people who this is their worst nightmare. I've seen people who have lost family members. I've seen people who are living on their own and have suddenly realised they don't want to live on their own and they're really struggling. One of the things that we did at Welcome is, you know, obviously, like everyone else, the buildings were closed. But because we have a museum, it's a public space. And we needed to open our museum to open that back up to the public. So we were planning throughout the summer to do this from October. As a result of doing that, we also had a look at whether we could open the building to staff. And we achieved that. We set up a socially distant safe place, and we put a whole bunch of health and safety in place to enable staff who needed to come back to the building for welfare reasons. It could be because of, you know, they weren't safe at home, or it could be because their mental health was suffering so severely that actually they needed to come in and get a change of scenery, be around people. So we were able to open up our main building to a small number of staff who identified with those groups that needed that space. That was really helpful, and we got a lot of positive feedback about that. One of the other things that we did was we just increased the number of touch points and the cadence of touch points, actually. So I've got a great member in my team who, I mean, she is an absolute superstar of a manager, and she's leading our infrastructure team. And she has a team of something like 16 people in it. And we have a lot of contractors as well. So overall, she's got about 20 plus people in her team. And she has done pub quizzes. And she has extended, you know, I've encouraged her, extend that to everyone. Don't just keep it to your team. Don't feel like you're not empowered to extend it to everyone. Please do. And all of these great things I see coming out, I'm encouraging everybody to open it up for everybody. Because these mental health issues are there, and they are very real, and everybody is experiencing it at some level. But back to this great manager that I've got. So she's done pub quizzes. Yesterday she hosted a Christmas event, and she set up some fun activities, and then invited me on as a guest judge for one of the activities she set up. I mean, I tell you, she's really managed to keep that team going throughout the whole pandemic. She's done a great job, so I just want to give a shout out to her.
Yeah, it's really important, I suppose, for morale, and you know, a lot of this stuff is we're not living in normal times. So I think remote working now or in this past year is not necessarily the same thing as remote working has been in the past or it will be in the future. So I think, you know, people who might actually have been comfortable in other scenarios maybe weren't comfortable in this particular year. And obviously all the same issues that usually crop up with remote working, you know, presenteeism is one of the key ones. So yeah, I can imagine that being a big challenge for you as a leader to deal with. And one of the interesting things you mentioned was building kind of people back up as well. So kind of helping them to feel like they can work from anywhere. Did you want to kind of expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I believe that we should be able to work anywhere at any time. The reason why this year has been particularly difficult is because it wasn't a choice. I think if somebody had said to you a year ago, Suraj, if someone had said to you, hey, how do you fancy working from home for a year? And you felt like you had a choice, what would you have said?
I suppose if you have no choice, you always feel like you're forced into it.
Yeah. And so because I think that I do think that everybody should have a choice to be able to work anywhere at any time. And what do I mean by that is you talk about presence and presenteeism. And I think that actually we don't want to be looking at are people there, as in are they available because they're being productive between the hours of 9 to 5. We want to talk to people about the outcomes and let people make up their own mind about when and how they work in order to achieve a good quality outcome. Because we do all have lives and we do all have things that are going on. We've got families and we've got new co-workers in the shape of dogs and cats and children. And so actually, if this is how this is going to be, and I really hope that we're able to come out of this viewing work in a very different way. If this is how it is going to be, we want to ask ourselves, how do we start having a dialogue about outcomes and enable people to fit their family in and coexist with family and work in the same space at the same time? So it might be that you end up working at 9 o'clock at night because actually you have things that you just have to get done during the day. You have a family and that's what your priority is. And that's okay. And I think that kind of model makes it so much more accessible for everybody. They would all have access to work if we can just think about outcomes, not being available between 9 and 5. I've always had a problem with the fact that most people have to work 9 to 5 because that's when the banking industry opens and closes. And I just think that's wrong because the reality is, this is a 24-hour world. So why on earth are we still doing 9 to 5 every day? You get your best daylight hours. We're all being told we have to take vitamin D, yet we all sit inside every day and don't get the opportunity to go outside. So why on earth are we still doing 9 to 5?
Yeah, I think yeah, the thing with that is that everyone is really different. I think the only pro about the 9 to 5 thing is, you know, as someone who's worked from home for a long time, is it at least gives you a bit of structure, and it gives you, you know when to switch off as well. So it has that. But yeah, I know what you mean. I think people should work when they feel comfortable working, when they're most productive. And that could be at any time. It could be at night time or, early morning.
I mean, I read a great book by a guy called Daniel Pink, and it's about time and the science of time. And he makes you think about, when are you at your best? Because that's when you should be doing work, not 9 to 5. If you are a lark, why on earth are you trying to do work at 5 o'clock in the evening? Why not start work at 5 in the morning and do it when you are at your best? So it's a really good book, and it just makes you think about time, what you do with your time, and when you should be doing certain things at different times of the day.
That does sound interesting. Something I should give a read. I just wanted to move on to the kind of leadership side of things, and particularly because we're talking about so many elements here of transformation. We're talking about technology, culture, mental health. There's so many different aspects that that people don't really think about when they think about a technology leader. How involved is a technology leader with transformation?
Well, it's a good question. My leadership style is one called intent-based leadership. If you want to learn more about it, go and look up David Marquette with a Q. He has written a book called Turn the Ship Around. He was a very successful submarine commander, and he tells us, there's a great YouTube video actually, where he just tells you the story about how he applied this and became this successful submarine commander. Intent-based leadership is effectively putting the decision-making where the information is. So what that actually means is there are some decisions that I will make because I have to make them, and that's more to do with the level of accountability and responsibility that I have. But I delegate as many of the decisions as I can to the people who actually have the information. I don't really want people to be pushing information up to me, because then I'm a bottleneck. If they have the information and this is a decision within their decision-making power, then crack on and make that decision and just let me know that that's what we are doing. What that does is it removes blockers. It enables you to be a lot more agile, a lot more nimble, and it's incredibly empowering for staff. As a leader, This then helps when you want to try and do a technology transformation, or any kind of transformation. If it's a culture transformation, you need to let the people with the information make those decisions. So to answer your question, how involved am I in the technology transformation as a technology leader? I have oversight of it. I steer and direct and set the vision and talk about the outcomes that we are seeking to achieve, but I let the team then figure out, or I don't even let them. I never ever want anyone to ask me for permission, and I make that very clear as well, is don't ever ask me for permission. Tell me what you intend to do. So I then say, tell me where we're going, how you think we're going to get there. So I'll tell them where we're going, and then I say, tell me how you think we're going to get there, and apply your skills and expertise and knowledge in the right context. So that is my leadership style. It's actually quite disempowering for a leader. So if anybody is thinking about it, be prepared to feel disempowered, but it's incredibly empowering for the team. You're building successors as well. They talk about great leaders build successors, not followers. And this is a great way to achieve that.
That does sound really interesting. I suppose the flip side is, does, as a technology leader, do you not then have to have a CEO or line manager of your own that shares that kind of feeling, because they have to kind of let you do your thing?
I do, yes. So my role reports into the CIO. The CIO reports into the COO, and the COO reports into the CEO. Lots of C's in there. But with him and as a committee, as a cabinet, with the CIO and with the rest of the senior leadership team. We define the vision and what that future looks like, and then we are empowered. So we apply the same principle across all our teams, and we are all empowered to then go and make sure that that is achieved in the way that we deem the most appropriate. And so the principles and the philosophy that I apply is of intent-based leadership. I know where we're going. I know what that end goal looks like. I am empowered to adjust it and refine it and make changes along the way as I need to. And then the team are coming along, and they're the engine that are driving the ship.
Okay. Yeah, that does make sense. And it sounds like it seems to work in your organization. So I just wanted to switch to something else around transformation, which is around, you know, the many myths that exist. You know, you hear so many different things about transformation, digital transformation in particular, where some people are just using it as a marketing exercise, some people are genuinely transforming the organization, and some people are, you know, not allowed to, but maybe they had to push through because of the pandemic. So what's your take on this, and what do you think are the main myths around transformation?
I absolutely love this question. You know, I did a presentation to the IT team at the Bank of England about welcomes transformation. It's quite a humbling story because I talk about what we actually really experienced. And we did a couple of attempts, neither of which were transformations. So I would love to share with you some of that, the experience that we went through. The question that you asked me about, what are some of the myths? So first and foremost, it is not a digital transformation. It is a transformation. Digital happens to be one of the components that needs to transform. Transformation is your technology, which opens up many opportunities. It is the culture, and it is your operating model. So if anybody's going into what they're calling a digital transformation, please think about what could also be affected or impacted by this, and bring that in, bake it into what you're calling your transformation. Don't just try and do the technology and not pay attention to everything else. The next thing is get help. You will not be able to do this on your own, because we are talking about culture and we are talking about technology and operating models. So get help, get a strategic advisor, get somebody that can actually drive this forward for you. And that's what we did at Welcome. So I came along as their transformation lead. And when I came along, they said new operating model, and we want to move to the cloud. And so we then wrote the strategy, wrote the plan, and I was then held to account to make sure that we were doing that and checking in. And, you know, I think there was a period of 6 months where we recruited 30 new members of staff, for example. They would not have been able to do that on top of their day jobs and dealing with the legacy. There's a lot of legacy when you do a transformation as well. So do not underestimate how much technical debt you may already have, how many stones you will turn over. And don't lose sight of the fact that you could create technical debt as a result of transforming, because technology changes at such a pace. I think the next advice I would give anybody is actually listen and understand the culture. Make sure you do understand the culture, and don't pay lip service to it. Genuinely show that you get it. If you want to change the culture, great, come up with a plan. But if you want to do a transformation and have the existing culture be part of that, then make sure you understand the culture. Also, define what acceptable success is and tell people what it looks like. Not what this amazing objective is that you're going to have in the future, because actually your future will change as you start to transform. But define what is an acceptable success for you. So these are all the myths around transformation. Yeah, we're going to start, we're going to end, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. The reality is that when you start this, it's going to constantly evolve and change, and your organization will grow and adjust and adapt and become agile. And that will just become your new operating model. It is really exciting when you get there.
Yeah, that's some really good advice. The last and kind of final question I actually had was around the timing of transformation. So obviously you've transformed, you know, you kind of went through that process before COVID, and many organizations are going through it now, or, you know, just at the start of the pandemic they started. Is there ever a time where it's too late to transform?
Never. You know, start now. Start small. It's never too late. It's interesting when you talk about Welcome having gone through the transformation, because would you believe we are still transforming? This year, we adopted new technology that further enhanced and enabled our shift of infrastructure out to the cloud. And we adopted new technology that did not exist when we started our technology transformation 2 years ago. So we are re-architecting things that we architected 2 years ago. That's what transformation is. So it's never too late, because the technology is constantly changing, it's constantly improving, it's constantly making it much easier for you to be able to adopt. It's more intuitive. So yeah, start small and start now.
Brilliant. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, Eileen, and it's been really interesting to hear about the kind of beginning of the Wellcome Trust transformation pre-COVID, and also the work you've been doing since. So thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Suraj. You know, I realise I never really got the opportunity to ask you very many questions, because we touched on the mental health around project managers and the articles that you've done. And I'd be interested in hearing your perception having done that. And there's so many questions for you that I have, but I realise I rambled a bit, so apologies. But, you know, do you want to talk a little bit more about what you learned over the summer?
Yeah, no, I think some of the interesting parts were kind of around, yeah, as I said, that the mental health aspect of staff. So there's a lot of staff who were kind of isolated and who felt like, even though they were happy to work in an office with their headphones on, they weren't really, you know, ready for working at home with their families or by themselves, with no interaction whatsoever. You know, that's one aspect, the mental health aspect. In terms of the transformation, yeah, I mean, many people have kind of been saying the same things as you've probably heard, of course, that the kind of 2 years of transformation in 2 weeks. And I think in the NHS, that was particularly prominent. I think it's just been a really interesting year. And I think the key thing that I've learned is that hopefully people have now realized the importance of technology leaders and CIOs and CTOs and, you know, IT managers, etc., because there's been such an emphasis on having to, you know, quickly move to remote working, to quickly scale up, to do all of these things, and, you know, and also rely on their kind of partners and vendors and other colleagues. So yeah, I think there's been a real shift in the importance of IT, and hopefully that's reflected in the years to come, but that remains to be seen. Thanks again, Eileen, for your time today. It's been really interesting to chat. That's it from us. I've been your host, Suraj Shah. For more episodes of the 101 podcast, please visit version1.com/1-0-1. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the 101 podcast. If you would like more information about any of our podcasts or our guests, visit us at version1.com/1-0-1.